Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We're coming to you live from the Coast to Coast AM World Headquarters right here in the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. George will be back Monday, and his guest will be Peter Ward and Brooks Agnew. But tonight is Saturday. That's right. And one of the great things everyone gets tonight, hopefully, a day off tomorrow. And a show like we have for you tonight, just kick back, turn down the lights, and yes, the studio is dark. Grab your favorite beverage of choice and go on a journey with me tonight, a night of discovery. I'm really excited because tonight we have Steve and Dawn Hess. And for the very first time, they have decided to come forward with their story. One that was documented in the book, The Mojave Incident, authored by Ron Felber. You remember Ron, he was on Coast with us a couple of months ago. They have kept private since 1991. But after they heard Ron and I talk on both Fade to Black and Coast to Coast AM, they felt that the time was right and that Coast and myself would and should be the platform for them to finally tell their story to the world. Tonight is a very big night for Coast listeners. This is why you listen to this show. But first, oh yeah, we have another first. Coming up after the break, we have Vic Minagna, the director, writer, and star of Star Trek Continues. Yes, he is Captain Kirk. But that's only part of the story, and tonight I get to introduce Vic to you and the incredible story that is Star Trek Continues. Now, you know the drill, and you know the rules. I have Twitter live to my left, right here in the studio. I follow it all night long. Follow me right now on Twitter, at J Church Radio. This is interactive. I hang out with you all night long. Let's do this. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and we'll get straight to Vic Minagna right after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. It's Saturday night. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Enjoy the bumper music. You guys just wait. Now, tonight, we have a world first with Steve and Dawn Hess, Ron Felber, and the Mojave Incident. It's going to be an incredible story. Get ready, get comfortable, turn down the lights. But first, Vic Minagna has been acting from the age of 8 all the way through college, where he majored in film and minored in theater. Vic has been in countless professional stage and film productions, but is perhaps best known for over 200 animated series and video games, including Full Metal Alchemist, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon, and many more. As a young boy, Vic, realizing his boyhood dream, fell in love with Star Trek and landed the role of Captain Kirk. Star Trek Continues. Welcome, Vic, for the first time to Coast AM. Say hello to everybody, Vic. How are you tonight?
How you doing?
Vic, I got to tell you, I'm so excited. And with everything that you're doing, you give back to the fans, you do conventions, you hang out, you star and write and direct in one of the coolest productions out there right now, Star Trek Continues. Life is good for you right now, my friend.
It is. I'm really blessed to get to do what I get to do. And, you know, you got to have fun with what you do. You have to take joy in it. And even though Star Trek Continues is completely a labor of love, it's not a commercial production. We put a ton of love and time and effort and skill and sweat into making sure that we make episodes as much like the original series as possible.
It is. It's an incredible job. And when you are a fan of the original series like I am, and probably every single listener right now in the Coast to Coast audience is, and, you know, we grew up with it. And when something like this is launched, you know you're going to have your critics, or especially somebody like me, that's going to look and try to find something wrong. And to be honest, Vic, you can't. How did you manage to pull this off?
Well, you know what, Jimmy? I got to tell you, there are always going to be people that try really hard to find inconsistencies or continuity errors. But the bottom line is there have been a lot of fan-driven productions over the years because, of course, there are millions of people around the world that love Star Trek, especially the original series of Star Trek. But when I set out to start this creation and to create this production, my goal was to make something that sounded and looked and felt as much like the original series as possible. And with the help of an amazing team of wonderful artisans and craftsmen, actors, fellow production people, what I believe we've accomplished is just that. They're episodes that feel like you're watching a continuation of the original series, as if it never was canceled.
Let me tell you what I did, and I am sure that for most that watch Star Trek Continues for the first time, right, they click for the very first time, I laughed and giggled throughout the whole episode, right? Then I had to go back and watch it for real. I had to get the shock value out of it because you miss the dialogue because you just keep shouting out loud, "This is great. This is," you know, and it's really the truth. And then you kind of go back and then you can take it serious and listen to the story and the dialogue and appreciate it for what it is. But it is truly amazing first time through to just appreciate the love and the attention to detail. And it's the small things that matter.
I appreciate you saying that, man, because the truth is that one of the favorite things, one of the highest compliments we get paid is literally thousands of people around the world writing us and saying, "Oh my God, after 10 minutes, I forgot I was watching a fan production. Something in me felt like I had accidentally stumbled across a vault somewhere where somebody had actually uncovered unseen, you know, unbroadcast episodes of the original series." And that's been our goal. And I'm so glad that you watch it once and giggle at it and watch it again and again and again. And the good thing is that they're all online at StarTrekContinues.com, free to watch as many times as you want.
Now, we're going to get to the cast in a second after we get, past the first break.
Good.
But there is another cast member here that is important as anybody else, which is the Enterprise. Absolutely. And absolutely. From the very beginning in 1968, the Enterprise was always the fifth Beatle, right?
Yep.
And you pulled it off. Let's just start there. How did you pull off the Enterprise?
Well, let me just say this. If it's not broken, you don't want to fix it. You know what I mean? And so many people, with technology the way it is now, with CGI technology and computer technology, it's really easy to want to let's make the ship, fancier and shinier with more detail, and let's make it do all kinds of really dramatic moves, things that they could have never done in the late 60s when they made the original series. But I teamed up with basically Star Trek royalty. His name is Doug Drexler. Doug has been involved in Star Trek since the Next Generation series. And he created a CGI model of the Enterprise that looks as much like a physical model as could possibly be. And I asked him if he would be willing to create and model the Enterprise shots for our episodes. And he said, on one condition, Vic, that you don't fix it, quote unquote, fix it. Don't try to make it, you know, feature fancy, Hollywood, flashy, kind of a thing. Make it like the original series. And I said, Doug, you are reading my mind, brother. We want people to feel like they're watching the continuation of the original series. So Doug has been in charge of bringing that beautiful ship to life and making people, when they watch it, feel like they're watching new shots that the camera team would have created had the series not been canceled and gone into a fourth season and a fifth season. And Doug has done an amazing job at doing that.
Well, you know, Doug's reputation is there, but that's also a lot of trust on your part to just let it go.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I must tell you, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I'm very particular about what I want. But I think what's happened with Doug and I is that there's an enormous amount of mutual admiration and respect. Doug knows that I love and respect him and his abilities, And I think he has a respect for my knowing what my vision for this show is. And we hammer out the shots together. And you know, and so far we're approaching our seventh episode together. And Doug loves to tell people that he's not tired of it yet. He's, you know, approaching his seventh episode with us and is having a great time. And I think that's a testament to the fact that we have a great working relationship.
After the show tonight on Coast, everybody should go over to Star Trek Continues. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200. Go straight there and do a couple of things that Vic and I are going to talk about tonight. And one of them is the set walkthrough. And I think that that's important because you watch as you watch an episode, you can tell that everything is real. In other words, there's no edits. There's no, you know, walking through a door and an edit of a door. And there's, you know, there's none of that there. And you're thinking to yourself that this can't be. But then you've got a full set walkthrough there as Star Trek Continues. And then you find out that you've got the entire deck of the ship is there.
Yeah. If you look through the internet, you will find some drawings, some schematic drawings from the Desilu studio that show you how the original series sets and soundstage were laid out. And we took those diagrams and those schematics, and our DP, Matt Busey, also happens to have, as luck would have it, happens to have a degree in architecture. And he took those schematic drawings of the original soundstage and extrapolated all of the numbers. And what we've built at our 19,000 square foot facility in South Georgia is as close as possible a recreation within inches of the original soundstage. All of the rooms interconnected with the main corridor. The bridge sets off in the corner by itself, with sections that roll in and out. It's breathtaking. And people that are able to come down and visit the studio, when the turbo lift doors open at the end of the corridor, and they see that suddenly they're looking down the corridor, they stand there, Jimmy, and they're transfixed. And it's like something in their brain says, this can't be real. You can't step into this. It's a TV show. It's a screen. You can't, it's not real. But you have to coax them. When I give these tours, I have to coax them into walking down the corridor. And as soon as they step into it, it's one of my favorite experiences to watch people take in the sensation of being on the Enterprise.
You're not going to have to coax me. I'm throwing on the Kirk shirt. I'm going straight to that. Now this is the other thing that I find interesting with that is the size of the studio enables you to, you know, light everything from above, right? I want everybody to understand. It reminds me of Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest when he does that famous line, you know, I got a gig in 30 minutes in Van Nuys, right?
Yeah.
with the cardboard set in the garage. This is not that.
Oh, good Lord, no.
How big is the studio?
Well, the studio is right at about 18,500, almost 19,000 square feet. And we have the entire facility built, and well, we're working on building like McCoy's laboratory, some of the incidental sets, but all of the main sets are built and interconnected. We just this last fall completed building the first ever most complete engineering set. The big monster set that Square Scotty worked with, the two-story set with the core, that the warp perspective core that seems to recede 100 feet into the distance. Our team down there, led by William Smith, our art director and set designer, rebuilt that amazing set, and it's going to be featured very prominently in episode 6, which is going to premiere in May, this coming May, coming up quick, at MegaCon in Orlando. But within the facility, besides the sets, we've got, you know, wardrobe departments and makeup departments and kitchen and common eating areas. And it's just a really wonderful facility and allows us to do what we're doing.
And the last thing I want to talk about really quick before the break, after that, we're going to get to the cast and how you pulled that off. But
yes,
the sixth Beatle is the music. And
yes.
All of the way that I want the audience to understand, everything that you love and appreciate from the original Star Trek series happens here. There is nothing that is held back. And one of them, it's the dramatic pauses, it's the music stabs, it's the music itself, and it's the drama that plays out with the music. The music plays such a big part.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. When I was a little boy and I fell in love with the original series of Star Trek, one of the things that grabbed me was the music. And it's so unique. It's so unique to Star Trek. They don't write music like that anymore. Today's television shows don't have music like that. So when we started out with this series, our first several episodes, we used music from the original series because I felt like it was so signatory of the original series. But then we just recently made friends with a fan of ours who discovered us on the internet named Andy Farber. And Andy teaches composition at Juilliard in New York City. He's an amazing composer, orchestrator, and he has created original music that we have actually recorded with a live orchestra for episode 4 and 5, and he's working on 6 right now. So not only is there a lot of that classic original series music in our episodes, but there's also new music recorded by a live orchestra that is completely in the style and vein of the original series music. It's really, really, really quite something. And on our website, Jimmy, for your listeners, on our website, among the besides the episodes to view, there are plenty of behind-the-scenes videos and special feature videos featuring the scoring sessions with the original music and the orchestras.
How did that change and open you up as far as the writing go? Because you know now you've got Andy to, you know, put the icing on the cake when it comes to scoring. But what does that do to the writing? Now you can do whatever you want.
Well, we've always tried to craft the stories purely for the story's sake. You know, you don't think about, well, what if we don't have a piece of music for this moment? Well, that's not the way you want to tell the story. You want to let the story tell itself and
Right. Let
the story go where it's going to go. And then once you cut the episode, and I do all the editing of our episodes, but once I do that, then I start going back. And of course, knowing the original series as I do, I'm hearing original music cuts from the show in my head, like, oh my gosh, this piece of music from such and such an episode, you know, a piece of the action or Mirror Mirror, or this piece of music from The Empath would be a perfect moment for this scene, a perfect piece to match the emotional moment. But as you say, the beauty is that if we don't find a piece or can't quite find a piece from the original series, Andy Farber is right there, and all I need to do is say, hey, Andy, I want something like this, only more like this, with a little bit of this sprinkled in. And Andy can write it and have the orchestra record it, and it's, you know, and it matches the picture perfectly.
As we head into the break, I'll throw you this really quick. Is there anything, I know that you are happy, but is there anything that you would change now that you're, you know, 7 episodes in and you've had this success with it? What would you change?
Wow. Honestly, I don't know that I would change anything. I'm very much of a divine providence kind of a guy, Jimmy. I believe that you know, people come into your life and are meant to, and things go a certain way, and I am so enormously grateful for every single person that is part of our production team. We truly have a family, and we come together twice a year and we shoot these episodes. And not only do we execute the episodes professionally and effectively and in an organized way, but we also have a hell of a lot of fun, and we love being around each other, and we know we're creating something that millions of people around the world are going to enjoy. And that gives us great joy.
I thought you were going to say it was the casting of Todd Haberkorn. You know, he was a bit of a diva, and he was a handful, and every single week you have to deal with him.
good old Todd is the little brother that I never had, that I always wished I had. And he does such a wonderful job with Mr. Spock. And your listeners, I hope they'll check out the episodes as soon as possible, because everybody involved, everyone from behind the camera to in front of the camera, I am just so elated and honored to have as part of this team.
Our guest tonight is Vic Minagna. Star Trek continues. You want us to know, or you want to know who Todd Habercourt is? We're going to talk about Todd and the rest of the crew right after this. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. Next week, George and I will be at the Conscious Life Expo right here in Los Angeles at the LAX Hilton, featuring prominent experts in the fields of science, spirituality, technology, consciousness. And George and I will both be hosting panels. And then on Friday, I'll be broadcasting live. Tickets and information at ConsciousLifeExpo.com. Tonight, right here, Vic Minagna, the director, writer, and star of Star Trek Continues. That's right, Captain Kirk. More with Vic when I come back. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Yes, George will be back on Monday. Now, Vic, before the break, there's something that has to be talked about, which is when we are talking about icons like Spock, McCoy, Scotty, Sulu, Uhura, Chekhov, these are iconic characters.
Right.
Yeah, and now out of all of probably the one, they've all got a job to do that is just, I can't imagine how difficult it is, and the fans that are rabid, but Spock has to be the one. Todd has landed on his feet and has really grown into the character, but he's got a very difficult job, and I think that he's pulled it off.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Jimmy, you know what? I got to tell you. My name is so weird. It's Italian. My last name is Italian, with all kinds of letters that are in there that you don't ever say. But let me ask you, how do you say tomorrow in Spanish?
Mañana.
That's how you pronounce my last name.
Really?
Mañana. Yeah. I just had to tell you.
That's so funny, because I have said your name one way for so long.
I know, and I just didn't even bother to say anything. But I thought, well, maybe I should.
You know what, Vic? I'm going to throw you under the bus. How many phone calls have we had in the last month and a half? A lot.
Yeah.
And you could have said it before the show.
Well, no, but you know what? You just call me by my first name.
So yeah, that's true too. That's too funny.
Let's talk about Todd.
Yeah, let's talk about Todd.
Todd is a fellow voice actor, as you said when you were talking about my work. I've been voice acting for animated shows and video games for over 200 now, for about 17 or 18 years.
Right.
And Todd Habercorn is a dear friend of mine, and he's a fellow voice actor, very talented voice actor. And when I decided I was going to create this series, Star Trek Continues, I always knew that I wanted to use actors. Actors. Too many fan productions, they mean well and they really love what they're doing, and you can tell that they're having a great time, but they're not actors. They don't have any training in that area. And so, sometimes that part of the production suffers. So I always knew I wanted to get good actors. Well, Todd really, really wanted to play Spock. I mean, he made an audition video for me where he not only put on a uniform and put on pointed ears, but he actually green screened himself into an original series episode, and he memorized the lines that Spock said in the scene. So he put a lot of work into it, and I knew that he really wanted to do it. And my concern at first, my only real concern, was that Todd is much younger. I mean, Todd's 31, 32 years old maybe, and he doesn't come across with that age and maturity of Leonard Nimoy. But he's a great actor. He's a really good actor. And so I decided, well, I always wanted to make Star Trek with my friends, and Todd is a good friend, and I always wanted to make it with good actors, and Todd is a good actor, so I cast him. And he has done a magnificent job with the role, as have everybody else. I mean, I've got a great crew of people assembled, and I'm very, very proud of everybody.
Let's kind of run through everybody really quick, and then I have some stuff that we have to get out of the way before the break. But Chris Doohan, how did you find Chris?
Well, Chris and I knew each other on Facebook, and when I decided I was going to do this, I contacted him and I said, "Hey, I've got a proposition for you. Can we have lunch?" And we met for lunch, and I said, "Listen, I'm doing this series, and my goal is to make the best continuation, the highest quality continuation of the original series, and I can't think of anybody that I would rather have play Scotty's role than Jimmy Doohan's son, Chris." And he thought about it, and he agreed, and he's done an absolutely magnificent job. And I tell you what, of all of our cast and crew, he probably has the least amount of acting background of our cast members, and yet it kind of runs in his blood, Jimmy. I think he naturally just locks right into the character that his dad made famous, and does an amazing job with it.
He must be having so much fun. And what
he
about
is.
Yeah? What about Chuck? How did you find Chuck Huber?
Well, and Chuck Huber is another voice actor friend of mine. Not only that, but Chuck, both Chuck and Todd and myself, we all have, even so far back as college training and college degrees in theater. Chuck Huber is a very talented actor who does tons of stage work. He's in a show right now. I think it's on CW. I'm not sure, but it's an amazing series that he plays a role on, and he does countless stage productions in Dallas. But I know Chuck as a voice actor. He worked on Full Metal and DBZ with me and has done tons of animated shows and video games, and he was the guy that I wanted to play Dr. McCoy. And again, does an amazing job.
And Grant, how did you find Grant Imahara?
Grant and I had done a couple of convention appearances together. I do event appearances where I sign autographs around the country, and Grant and I did Dragon Con together several years ago. We hosted and judged the Masquerade together, and we hit it off. And I saw him at a party a couple of years later, and I showed him some photos of the sets that we were building. And his eyes lit up, and he was like, "Wow, that looks amazing. That's just so cool." And as I'm standing there talking to him, I was thinking, oh my gosh, he would be perfect as Sulu. And I had not yet cast the role of Sulu. And Grant was, you know, more than happy to step in. George Takei is a big hero of his and has a great deal of admiration for him. And again, Grant just has the time of his life stepping onto those sets and playing that iconic role.
And Kim Stinger, she just like everybody else, after you get through an episode, you get acclimated, you know, as to what's going on, you're cool with it. You're cool with Chuck as McCoy. You see
right.
McCoy there, and it's the same thing, you know. Kim, those are huge shoes to fill, and she's really, really good.
And you know what? Just like with some of the others, Nichelle Nichols was a huge role model for Kim Stinger. And I met Kim Stinger on another production, and I asked her if she would be interested in playing Uhura in my production, and she agreed, and she does a wonderful job with the character. And I mean, everybody loves Kimmy. We have a wonderful time whenever we get together. We all just have such a great time together making these episodes.
Now, Wyatt Lenhart as Chekhov, is where did he... How he was cast is an interesting story.
Wyatt is a really fun story.
He is, but is he Russian? Is there any Russian bones?
No, he's not Russian. He's just a great little actor. Let me tell you about Wyatt Lenhart. Wyatt Lenhart was an anime fan who came to a convention that I was signing autographs at. And I did a panel where I challenged the fans to stump me with trivia questions from the original series of Star Trek. And Wyatt came to this panel, and he actually had some amazing, very, very complex, obscure questions about the original series. And after the panel, I started talking to him about, well, how, you know, you're a young kid. How do you know about so much about the original series? And he's like, my dad, you know, and I watched it and I love it so much. And when I started casting this show, he came into my mind. And I thought, I mean, I knew he was an actor. He was like 17, 18, 19 years old at the time. And I contacted him and I said, Wyatt, can you do a Russian accent? And he tried one and he sounded great. And I said, well, how would you like to play Chekhov in my series? And he just has a wonderful time too. And we're so, so proud to have him involved.
And my favorite, I know Todd's all upset, but you know the drill, Michelle Specht. Yeah. She is absolutely amazing. And she captures that 60s vibe. She's got that thing going on. She was a great find.
You know what? Michelle is an incredibly great actor. I mean, you know, you can't deny that. I mean, she has a ton of credits to her name. If you were to look her up on IMDb, you'd see that she's been involved in a lot of things, and she's very talented. And I tell you what, you know, I was thinking, I don't know who had a harder challenge, whether it would be harder for me and Todd and Chuck to embody these iconic roles, or whether it would be harder for somebody brand new to come into the mix with a brand new character and try to create a new crew member that can fit in and make her own place with the original cast. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How do you add a new character?
You don't. You play it safe is what you do. Right.
And when we were talking about her involvement, we briefly talked about her possibly playing Nurse Chapel or her possibly playing Yeoman Rand. We were looking at some of the original crew members from the original show. And then we thought, you know, one thing we wanted to do with our series is to begin to make overtures toward the next generation, the next series. So we thought, well, what did the Next Generation series have that the original series didn't? Well, it had a holodeck. So we started introducing an experimental holodeck. And it had this and that and this and that. Well, guess what else Next Generation had that TOS did not? A ship's counselor. And so we decided that we were going to create the first ever experimental ship's counselor. And so we created Dr. Elise McKenna, and she comes onto the ship, and for the first several episodes, Kirk's not really sure he sees the need for one. So Kirk's a little bit, you know, a little bit standoffish about welcoming her into the crew, but hopefully as your listeners go and watch the episodes, they will find that she really develops the character well, and by the fourth episode, there are some really powerful scenes where she basically, you know, endears herself and earns her place in the crew, and Kirk finally acknowledges her as a member of the crew.
Now let's talk about you for a second, Vic. It's all about you, so let's talk about you for a second. Look, Captain Kirk and Bill Shatner and the way that character was developed, you capture the essence without imitating and taking it to cliche. Conscious decision.
And absolutely. Let me tell you something. I love me some Bill Shatner.
We all do.
I love William Shatner. I when I discovered this series at 10, 11, 12 years old, I loved the character of Captain Kirk, and I loved who he was. His integrity and his bravery and his passion and his love for his ship and his love for his friends and his leadership. And you know what? It coincided with my parents having divorced and my dad was gone. And so this captain of this starship became, you know, a father figure and a role model to me. And so the last thing I would ever want to do is for anybody to think that I was mimicking or, you know, in any way, you know, doing some kind of a parody of William Shatner's Captain Kirk. I think It's wonderful and brilliant, and he is Captain Kirk. And my desire with Star Trek Continues was for people to feel like they were watching a continuation. I had no desire to make Captain Kirk my own, or to recreate the role, or to re-envision the role of Captain Kirk. No, nobody needs to do that. William Shatner is Captain Kirk. He immortalized that role, and the best tribute I can pay him is to play the role in a way that people feel like they're watching a continuation of that character. And that's our goal with the entire series. As you know, the original series was abruptly canceled in its third season on television. And yet we all remember that Captain Kirk used to say at the beginning of the series, these are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. It's a five-year mission.
Right.
Well, they never got to complete the five-year mission. So my goal with Star Trek Continues is to make 13 episodes, the equivalent of a TV season. And in those episodes, my goal is to finish and give a series finale to the most iconic television show in history that never had one. And basically craft the story so that we leave the characters where the motion picture found them in the late 70s when they launched Star Trek the Motion Picture. If you think about it, Jimmy, if your listeners think about it, Captain Kirk had given up his ship and taken a desk job, for crying out loud.
Right.
Now, everybody knows how much Jim Kirk loved his ship. What in God's name would make Captain Kirk give up his ship? That's a hell of a story, wouldn't you say? I'll bet there's a powerful story there. And Spock leaves Starfleet and goes back to Vulcan to pursue the Kulinar, the purging of all remaining emotion. Now, what emotional experience happened that caused Spock to decide to do that? And McCoy left the service altogether, and the ship went into dry dock for rebuilding and refitting it. So we are crafting our series to fill in that gap and give the original series of Star Trek the ending that it never had.
Have you found that the fans approach you and say that you're not Kirk enough? And then you have the other fans that want you to un-Kirk and maybe bring it back a little bit?
I'll be honest with you, I have not. I'm being completely honest when I say that. Now, I will tell you this. I do avoid a lot of social media because you're always going to find people that hate what you do and love what you do. So you're never going to please everyone. And so, you know, I am paying the best tribute to William Shatner and this show and that I love so much as I possibly can. And I have not heard anybody say, I think you should do more Shatner style of performance. And honestly, I've not really heard anybody say, I think you do too much. I have heard, I will tell you, I have heard 100 times over that there's just enough nuance to feel like you're watching the original series, but it's not overdone. And I have people like James Kerwin and Casey Shafsky and Lisa Hansel and Ralph Miller on set who I ask to make sure and tell me if I'm doing too much because I don't want to do that. And so so far I feel like we've been very, very successful at finding that perfect middle ground where it feels new and yet it feels familiar.
You know you're the luckiest man in the world.
And I am the luckiest man in the world. That is true.
Now, really quick, we're going to be up against a break here. So, Vic, how is this paid for? I know that this is fan-driven, and how can the fans help with all of the productions?
God bless you for asking that, Jimmy, because I'm going to lay it out for you very simply. When I started this series, a lot of people told me to launch a Kickstarter, to ask people to give me money, to make the first episode. And something in me said, that's not a good idea. Don't ask people to give you money for something you've never proven you could do. I mean, if there was ever a chance to put your money where your mouth is, right, this would be it. And so I personally, out of my own savings, paid for the first episode, Pilgrim of Eternity. I paid probably cost me probably $70,000 or $80,000 in terms of renting the building, having the raw materials, lumber, and everything purchased, and then flying everybody down to the studio, buying their hotel rooms, buying them food, renting equipment, all of that. I paid for the first episode, and then we released it to the public, thinking that if people enjoyed it, then we would have a proof of concept that we would, you know, we would be able to use to possibly, you know, make more. So we launched a Kickstarter, or as we like to call it, a Kirkstarter, 2 years ago to raise enough money to make three more episodes. And that's exactly what we did. Unlike some of the crowdfunding programs out there where people ask for a lot of money and they get it, and then what do they ever do with it? You know what I mean?
Well, Vic, we're up against a break, and so they can go to Star Trek Continues, and all of the next Kickstarter campaigns are there.
Get to talk on the other side of the break?
Well, no, we have
am I done?
Yeah, we did a whole hour.
Here's the thing. Go to StarTrekContinues.com. We're launching an Indiegogo campaign March 5th. Go to the top right corner of our Facebook page and click sign up to get more information about it. We're launching another campaign. Every penny goes on screen to make episodes, and our goal is to finish the original series.
Thank you so much, Vic. Vic Mignogna, Star Trek Continues. StarTrekContinues.com. This is Coast to Coast AM. When I come back, Ron Felber and Steve and Don Hess, the Mojave Incident. I'll be back.